And good morning to everyone. Our first case this morning is Hongsermeyer versus Hongsermeyer. Mr. O'Neill, good morning to you. You may approach and you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Sam O'Neill. I represent the appellant Eric Hongsermeyer in this matter, and I would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. This is a custody case related to sexual abuse allegations made by the minor child in this matter against her stepfather and the husband of her mother. This case started out as a juvenile case, and the initial allegations were made to my client Eric Hongsermeyer and his wife Cassie Hongsermeyer. In this case, we're asking the court to find that the district court erred in finding that the appellant had to show by preponderance of the evidence that the stepfather actually abused the minor child. We're also asking the district court, asking this court to find that the district court abused its discretion in dismissing appellant's complaint to modify. And finally, we're asking the district court, or this court, to find that the district court erred in finding that the pleading did not provide notice that could be reasonably calculated to give the mother notice that change of custody would be found on a basis other than the sexual abuse investigation made against the stepfather.
How was the issue framed in the plaintiff's filing?
The exact wording was... In the complaint, it stated that since that time, a material change in circumstances has occurred, which was not anticipated at the time of the entry of the decree. To wit, defendant has remarried Matthew Eckerd. Mr. Eckerd was the subject of an investigation in York County, Nebraska for sexual assault of the minor child. The case was in the juvenile court for York County, Nebraska, located at case number JV-1728. The case was dismissed on September 15th, 2017.
What was the material circumstance that you're claiming changed?
Your Honor, we're claiming that the allegations made by the minor child, which culminated in the investigation of Mr. Eckerd, and the repeated allegations made to not only the minor child's parent, the counselor, and the child psychologist, along with the behavior changes in the minor child. If you read through the record, the minor child had issues when she'd come back from visitation with the mother. She would be in a funk, she would be tired, it would take her a couple days to come back into her normal self, and finally the most extreme was that she had problems with bedwetting. So ending around age four, her issues with bedwetting went away, okay? And then leading up to this investigation, she started experiencing bedwetting again.
What was the plaintiff's assertion that was causing that?
The plaintiff's assertion was that, and it was corroborated by the child psychologist, is that this physical abuse or sexual abuse was leading to her showing stress by these instances of bedwetting. Basically, they had stopped.
But there was nothing about bedwetting or stress in the complaint, was there?
Well, the complaint states that this investigation, and it's all tied to the same thing. So the complaint itself lists that the main issue is that there was this investigation based on the allegations of the minor child against the stepfather for sexual abuse. And each thing, if the complaint is liberally construed in the plaintiff's favor, each thing relates back to that investigation. So all the allegations relate to that same investigation. All the issues of bedwetting, all the issues of the behavior of the minor child after those visits, they all relate back to the same thing.
Well, let's say for hypothetical purposes that the sexual assault did not occur. Wouldn't the stress been caused by a false claim of sexual assault?
I guess I'm not following.
Well, key issue here that is, that I think the district court saw was if you had to prove the sexual assault occurred or not.
Right.
So it comes down to whether it occurred or whether it was a false allegation of occurring, which I believe there was an assertion that was made by the father and stepmother.
And I think that's wrong. I think that unfairly puts us in a position where we have to prove that the abuse actually happened. And I don't think that's the key issue. I think the key issue is that the series of actual claims of sexual abuse that she made about her stepfather. So whether or not it happened or not, I think that if a court, the original court that granted this divorce decree, if they heard all of that evidence that was presented at the trial in this case, I don't think that they would have done the same thing or found, they would not have ordered the same parenting plan that they did in this time, which was basically a 50-50 parenting plan where they were transferring her back and forth. I don't think a court would have listened to that evidence, listened to a child psychologist say that she's been open and honest from the beginning, that she's been a victim of sexual abuse, that she's consistently identified the stepfather as the abuser. I don't think they would have looked at the counselor's records, which stated the same thing and actually went into more detail on how the abuse happened.
What was that detail? Respectfully, there were some allegations of a glass being involved. How do you explain a glass?
Well, and that's a difficult thing when a case like this, because this is a six-year-old child. And so through her counseling, I would take it as she is I guess, correlating glass or something like that to pain. And so when she's saying that he came into my room, he dropped a glass, I think the exact phrasing was that he pushed it into my vagina, and it hurt, and I cried out for mommy, and when she came in the room, I was bleeding, and she put a napkin on it. To me, that's a child who's in pain, and I don't know how the glass fits into it, but I think that's her own...
Did the counselors ever explain or give a rational explanation for the glass?
I think... In the counselor's notes, I think there is some stuff where she has kind of the same analysis of, I'm not sure what the glass means, but this could be a coping mechanism.
What about the glass on the shoe?
And the same thing with the glass on the shoe. It's some type of pain. I don't know. You know, it's hard to listen to a story or to her account of this as a six-year-old child and get into her mind and see what she's actually seen or what's happened to her. And so I think the best we can do is just say that something's happened. You know, a six-year-old child doesn't just make this stuff up, you know, and she's not just consistently making these same allegations for her own benefit, you know.
So is it your contention that there was proof by a preponderance of the evidence of a sexual assault, or is it your contention that you needn't prove by a preponderance that there was a sexual assault?
I'm arguing there's both. I'm arguing that we did prove by a preponderance of an evidence that a sexual abuse actually happened, but I'm also arguing that I don't think I had to prove that to begin with. But I think if you review the record, there's sufficient evidence to show that she was abused, and if there's not sufficient evidence to show that she was abused, then the material change of circumstances is this repetitive evidence of something happened. You know, she kept making these allegations. She said it to her parents. She said it to her counselor. She said it to her child psychologist. She had these behavior issues that both the mother and father noted in their testimony. So all of that is the material change in circumstances. And then at that point, the district court should have done a best interest of the child analysis, and he didn't do that. And with that being said, I'll save the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you very much. Mr. Knudsen, good morning to you.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Stephen Knudsen. I'm here on behalf of the appellee, Ms. Ashley Eckert, in this matter, which was decided correctly by the Hall County District Court. In this case, the appellant wants you to believe that he need not prove anything happened, and that allegations alone are substantial enough to show a material change in circumstances is part of the two-prong test. There is the two-prong test where you must show that a material change in circumstances has occurred and that in the best interest of the minor child, a modification in custody would be warranted at that point in time. The appellant's entire argument rests upon a claim of sexual assault by the minor child's now stepfather. The minor child's now stepfather had been involved in this child's life for much longer than before the modification in this case, which was previously entered by stipulation of the parties. He was well involved in their life, so the fact that they got married was a natural progression of their relationship.
Did the trial court believe that there was not a sexual assault, or did the trial court render an opinion on that?
The trial court stated that they could not find evidence to show that there was, based on all the evidence which was presented to the court at the time of trial, that there was a sexual abuse that had occurred by the minor child's stepfather in this matter.
Did the trial court treat that as the only allegation of substantial or material change of circumstance?
In the court's order, that would appear what it did, as it then went on to raise a smaller question of whether there was evidence, and I think that this is what the appellant really hangs their hat on, is that the trial court stated there may be a suggestion of something else that could possibly be a material change in circumstances, but they didn't raise that in their complaint.
There's some evidence the child was in stress. I mean, she's going to a counselor, she's going to a psychiatrist, she's having some bedwetting issues, so there's some evidence she's in stress. She's talking about some abuse at school, so something's going on, isn't there?
I would say it's probably just a child being a child who's in the middle of a circumstance where you have a new stepmother who's involved with the Department of Health and Human Services, and that was a major issue and one of the trial court's biggest issues in issuing their ex parte order and then coming back from that saying, look, the initial interview was done by the stepmother in this case.
The pleadings being framed incorrectly?
By the plaintiff? I would believe so. Not to say that there is a material change in circumstances. The issues weren't fleshed out. The issues weren't what are the causes of stressors, if there are any. Because I don't think that there was enough evidence to say that she's stressed beyond the normal, beyond a normal child.
Was there anything about the evidence that surprised your client?
That surprised my client?
Mm-hmm. Did everybody know what was on deck?
I think the only issues that were really, again, fleshed out during the course and scope of the trial was the sexual abuse allegations, and nothing around that. There were some ancillary issues which weren't overarching, and they weren't a major contention. It was the standard, how is everyone doing when they're at each other's houses? My client informed that when she returns home from the appellant's home, there's also an adjustment period. These are adjustment periods that may cause stress, but that the parties had stipulated to this agreement previously, and it worked out. The child was doing well in school.
I'm concerned about the line of questions which Justice Funk has introduced here. There's evidence something is going on that is other than the day-to-day operations of the household.
Certainly, and I think that evidence was all presented to the court. And they.
So what is our standard of review?
Here on this issue, it's my understanding to be de novo on the record, whereby it's an abuse of discretion standard. I don't think that the trial court in this matter abuses discretion. I think that...
Are we to give some deference then to the trial court?
You may, and it's a may language, it's not must language. You may give deference to the fact that the finder of fact, the trial court, heard the witnesses, observed the witnesses in the courtroom, and I believe that certainly
so
helps.
So why should we give the trial court deference here, or should we?
I believe you should give the trial court deference here, because I think that there was some issues which were covered by all parties. Notably, that each party acknowledged the fact that there was a complete investigation done in this case by the Department of Health and Human Services and by law enforcement. And when they do their investigations...
What do we know about their investigation from the record, how complete it was?
From the record, there is not an entire amount. There were some...
We don't know much of anything, do we?
Not much of anything, but we do know from testimony by the Department of Health and Human Services that they did do an investigation, that they had met with the minor child, that law enforcement had met with the minor child, that the juvenile case that was in York County County Court was dismissed. And I think the other major issue, or the major favorable thing for my client, is that there were never any criminal charges brought. There was no physical evidence of any abuse. And additionally, the psychologist in this case did not initially meet with the minor child until some 7 months after the original accusations, which were brought forward. I do believe that the preponderance of the evidence standard would be appropriate, though it's not explicitly stated in case law that I have found on this matter, as a preponderance of the evidence is simply slightly more than not. Here I think that there's not enough of a showing by the plaintiff appellant that any sexual abuse did occur, and I believe that the sexual abuse was the main issue which was tried before the court.
Why do you believe the evidence fell short of demonstrating a sexual assault?
I don't believe there was any corroborating evidence. When you're dealing with a case of this sensitive of a nature and you only have a testimony from a minor child who initially was interviewed by an interested party who has a great interest in this case, who has limited experience in doing such interviews and then decides to do essentially such an interview, it may skew the testimony there moving forward from her. You plan an idea.
Did the trial court make credibility findings, or are credibility findings implied?
I believe that credibility is implied. They didn't specifically state outright in their order as to credibility. And in fact, I think that the order is probably somewhat lacking in that matter. But I do believe that there was, as all of the evidence came about, it was all based on reports to a psychologist, again, some 7 months after the original accusations, in time where you're essentially living with one of the parents, and then moving forward on from there, there was no corroborating evidence.
Corroborating evidence would you expect there to be in a case with this sort of facts?
I would expect a medical report to come back and show that there was some sort of physical trauma, especially in light of the glass, the bleeding, those sorts of things. There was no, after the investigation, and in such short of a time, I would anticipate and expect that there would be some physical signs of trauma. There were none. There were none that were presented to the court. There were none that I was ever made aware of. That was never brought up in discovery or anything like that. So where you have the contention that there was bleeding, that there was physical touching of a minor child, I certainly believe that if there was to be those accusations, something that would follow would be a medical report which would show that there is physical trauma. And here we do not have that at all. All we have are simply accusations, which are uncorroborated at best. As far as notice is concerned, I do not believe my client was put on notice as to any other material change in circumstances, as the entire basis of the complaint was simply the fact that she had remarried and that her new husband, the minor child's new stepfather, was accused of these things. I don't think that an accusation alone without some sort of substantiation, or in this case, because of the nature of the charges, such great substantiation, that could be the basis for material change. Putting my client on notice of something else may have brought that into issue. However, they did not do so. And as I say, my time has run. I would thank the court.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? 1 minute and 5 seconds. Mr. O'Neill.
Thank you. One important issue that I want to go back to is this notice issue. And I want to address the fact that there were no surprises of any of the evidence that was presented at the trial. Discovery was had in the matter, and it wasn't like we showed up with the complaint that we filed and tried to allege, you know, drug abuse by the mother or something like this. It all goes back to the central investigation of the stepfather for the sexual abuse of the minor child in this matter. And it all relates back.
If these other issues were not caused by a sexual assault, is there evidence that would connect them to the mother and the stepfather's home in some way, such that we could conclude that the bedwetting and the problems the child was experiencing were caused by that home?
I would point to the fact that there's testimony in the record that says that her behavior was different, noticeably different from the time that she would return back to her father's home for a period of days.
Are those the other issues you're talking about?
What's that?
Are those the other issues that are being talked about here?
What do you mean?
The change in the child's behavior, is that?
Well, I think it all relates to the same thing, but if you're looking for evidence outside of the sexual abuse, then her behavior coming back from her mother's home, which the stepfather lived in, was markedly different from the time that she left. The fact that she hadn't had any bedwetting issues from the age of 4 and now was wetting the bed, I think she wet the bed 23 times in the period of a couple months. And then add on top of that her visits with the counselor and the opinions of the counselor, I think that there was plenty of evidence outside of that. We're asking the court to find that there was abuse of discretion and either to award the appellant custody of the minor child or remand this case back to the district court for the judge to go through a best interest of the minor child evaluation, which was not done in this case.
Why didn't the minor child testify?
Well, it's a 6-year-old child, and that's a hard choice to make, and that's something that her and myself and her parents discussed, and at that time we chose that we're not going to put her in a situation where she has to go through that again. We felt that the evidence through the counselor and the child psychologist would be sufficient.
When you said parents, you mean the father?
My client, the father and the stepmother. If there's no other questions, then thank you.
Thank you very much.